Okay, that's an inside joke you won't get, but the studio is amused by it. All right, welcome to the Young Turks. Cenk Uygur, John Iadarola with you on this lovely Monday afternoon, where we will yell and scream while having a good time. So we've got numbers on the.
That's kind of the tagline for the show, I think.
I think so.
We yell and scream while having a good time.
Yes, and the little thing that I threw in there could also be a byline. We've got numbers. In other words, we have facts. We have facts to back it up. Okay, so the health care bill of the Republicans is has been scored. Mm-hmm. We'll tell you what the damage is. Damage report coming up in a second. Ron Johnson disproves the myth of the Republican moderate. I will rage on that. The travel ban is in effect, or soon in a couple of days will be. I'm telling you the whole show. Okay.
So, oh, good. Well, then I'll just go.
Okay. So, why did the Supreme Court decide the way that it did, including its liberals? But my favorite story in the first hour, and there's a lot of great stories in the second hour, including professors and doctors being fired. You might be happy about the doctors that are fired. No, it's not Dr. Ben Carson. But it is a
Dr. Love?
No, but it's very controversial and a very interesting story. The professor being fired is also very, very controversial. But anyway, the main thing I want to tell you is at the end of the first hour, don't miss it. The Koch brothers are on a warpath. We'll tell you what that warpath is. And I think that the quotes from that from Republican legislators are so, so telling.
And from the donors.
Yes. Oh, and from the donors. Oh, God, it's TYT 101. It's a great story. Don't miss that. That's later in the program. By the way, if you do miss any of the program, lucky for you, as my son says, lucky me. could be a member and download the show and stream it and watch it anytime you want. TYTnetwork.com/join. All right, Johnny Pye, let's get started.
Okay, I hear this report came out. I guess we'll talk about it a little bit. The CBO report on the Senate health care bill has finally been released, and it is just as draconian, just as scary, I should say, as we expected it would be. The Senate Republicans bill, and this is according to the CBO, would cause an estimated 22 million more Americans to be uninsured in the coming decade. 22 million. And so that now has colored discussion about the Senate healthcare bill, as it should. We're going to break down some of the other numbers as well. But that's really the big one. And I don't know if it's not like the Republicans were out there sort of implying that things would be better, because they haven't been out there at all to talk about this bill. There's been almost no discussion, almost no interviews, aside from the few Republican senators who've come out at least presently against it. No one has had to defend this bill, really. And that seems absurd that we can potentially, you know, the stereotypical, it's 1/6 of the economy that's going to be modified, tens of millions of people will be thrown off their health insurance. And along the way, the Republicans don't have to take any questions. There will be almost no debate. And so we can break down some of the other numbers, but I am glad that the media is running with this, and hopefully there won't be a lot of people around the country who don't know this 22 million figure by the end of the day. Although I should point out, perhaps even scarier than the 22 million in a decade is the 15 million in 1 year who are gonna lose health insurance, which, as I pointed out on Twitter, is basically for the next year, every month a million people will be thrown off their health insurance leading up to the midterm election. So that's terrible for those people and their families, but also probably the Republicans, who are gonna have a lot of pissed off people come 2018.
But their donors are screaming, get it done and get it done quick. And by the way, make it more draconian. Not good enough. We want more people thrown off of healthcare. It's not a hyperbole. They're saying this is too moderate a bill. So 22 million people losing their insurance, not enough for some of the Republican donors like the Koch brothers. So I'll jump in with a couple of numbers for you guys that also. Look, on the upside, the deficit goes down by $321 billion. Keeping it real, keeping it fair. So that is part of the Congressional Budget Office's numbers as well. Now remember, Obamacare also lowered the deficit. You almost never heard about that, but it did. So that's not really the main choice that they're making. The main choice they're making is how much do we get rid of healthcare and people who are receiving healthcare, and how much do we charge more for healthcare in return for what? In return for tax cuts for the rich, which leads us to this number, according to CBO. About Medicaid, which Donald Trump said wouldn't be cut at all, not a dollar. shockingly enough, cut more than a dollar, $772 billion in cuts in this proposal, and almost all of that going to the wealthy in tax cuts.
Now, it seems like when you say that almost $800 billion is going to be cut, that people could at least agree. I know that we're divided as a nation, but we could agree that that's a cut. And yet, in the days leading up to this report, Sean Spicer's out there saying this will have no negative impact on Medicaid. Kellyanne Conway saying there will be no cuts to Medicaid. There's no expectation of truth anymore. You can lie in the most blatant, obvious way, and it doesn't matter. It has no effect because we live in a post-truth world. You can simply say it's not cutting Medicaid when it's objectively cutting almost $800 billion from Medicaid. I don't understand how we could have gotten to this point, but that's the place that we're at. There's a bunch of numbers that we can throw around. Actually, could you jump ahead to graphic 9? I want to bring up this this infographic because it's going to show both the deficit reduction that we're talking about there. That you're going to see the total at the bottom there. But also breaking down a lot of the other changes, extra costs, extra reductions. Those are interesting numbers in total. But if we could go ahead to graphic 30, this is not getting as much discussion, but I saw a few people talking about it on Twitter. There's a lot of numbers there. Don't worry about too much. But you're seeing the top numbers are for what we currently have, the premiums that you have under current law. The bottom numbers are what you would have under the Senate bill. And what you're seeing there circled in red is the amount a 64-year-old, somebody who retires, how much they would have to pay. It's more than triple. It's more than triple. And there are some, we don't have it all in the graphics there. This is middle income, 56,000. There are people at the lower end at $24,000, $25,000 a year in income who will pay four times what they're paying now. And I hope that all of you watching this are so well off that you don't need to think about that. But if you are making $24,000 a year, you don't have three or four times as much money just hanging around that you can pay for your insurance premiums. But think about that there. This isn't just the people who are being thrown off their insurance. This is the people who theoretically will stay on their insurance. Going into this midterm election, the seniors who we know love to vote will be paying three or four times as much. That is insane. Think about the cut to your standard of living when so much more of your income has to go to that. When you could theoretically be paying half your income on your insurance premiums. They kept saying, we're gonna get premiums down, we're gonna get deductibles down. And this does the exact opposite. How many promises can you break in a single bill?
Counterpoint, John. There are no donors to Republican senators that make $24,000 a year. Okay, so.
Damn.
Okay, I think I win that argument, or at least the millionaire donors did. Okay, so two things to build off of that. Here's what we're gonna find out. We're gonna find out if there is such thing as a moderate Republican, because we keep getting told by the establishment press that there is. They keep talking about this Republican moderate that's gonna ride to the rescue, that their cavalry's on the way, that they will not allow the Republicans to do this kind of draconian healthcare bill. I keep wondering who the hell they are and when they're gonna arrive. So far, hadn't seen them yet. There's four Republican senators at a minimum that have objected to this bill. They all think it is too liberal. Oh my God. So 22 million, not enough. $770 billion cut from Medicaid, not enough. Nearly $800 billion in tax cuts to the rich, not enough. Okay, so where the hell are the so-called moderate Republicans?
We got some quotes for you that'll.
Okay, so.
It's something.
Okay, so if the Republicans pass some version of this bill, maybe tweaks around the edges, but this, in essence, this bill, you'll know that there is no such thing as a moderate Republican. It's just an establishment press gimmick to make you think that there's balance in the country. There's no balance. Okay, yeah. Again, we always tell you ahead of time. We don't Monday morning quarterback it. Maybe the moderate Republicans, all they need is three to kill the bill. Three. If three moderate Republicans at a national level exist, this bill will not happen. Okay? Yeah. So we're gonna find out. Are there three moderate Republicans in the whole country? Mm-hmm. In the whole country, again, at the national level. So why does the press, the so-called liberal media, wanna prop up this BS talking point about all these swarms of moderate Republicans? Yeah. So that question will be answered. I won't answer it. The Republican Party will answer it. They'll answer it whether they pass this bill or not. And then the last thing we're gonna find out is if they do pass it, is it true what Donald Trump said, that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it? Because
can he shoot 22 million people?
Yeah, now I don't want to go that far. But can you take healthcare away from and increase the cost of healthcare and deliver less healthcare for the people who still have it? And do it to senior citizens on a grotesque level, the ones who vote the most, and still get away with it? So we'll have
voter
our answer.
Suppression and gerrymandering and
we're gonna and all the all those political ads. So we're gonna have our answers about the Republican Party in a couple of days or a couple of weeks, and then we're gonna have our answers about Republican voters perhaps in 2018.
Yeah.
So this is momentous. And we'll decide many things.
Yeah, just a couple more things from the CBO report. And by the way, we tend to focus, I think, with good reason on people who will lose their health insurance and all that. But understand that is just one part of this. The people who lose the health insurance, the people who will die from losing their health insurance, the people who stay on their health insurance will get less for their insurance. They will pay far more out of pocket with higher deductibles, lifetime caps, annual caps, all of that. We're not discounting that. We try to remind you of that as often as possible, but not necessarily every single time. But a couple of things from this, the CBO report. Again, another nail in the coffin of this stupid talking point that Obamacare is in a death spiral and it's gonna die of its own accord. They say in their report that in 10 years, Obamacare will not be any worse off than it is now. You will not have gigantic sections of the country where there's no insurers providing health insurance. That is simply a crazy Republican talking point. They do, by the way, say that under this Senate bill, there will be some areas, not gigantic widespread areas, but there will be some areas where there is zero or one insurance provider. So saying that that's why you need to pass this bill desperately doesn't actually make any sense. And can we just, to that same point, this idea that we so need to pass this bill right now, if you simply did nothing, if you didn't do anything at all, which is really simple, and in Washington they love doing that. Do nothing, in 10 years, 22 million more people have health insurance than if you pass this bill. Think about that, that simply going home and just spending the weekend with your mistress, you could give 22 million more people effectively health insurance than passing this bill. That's insane but true. Now let's move on to what you were talking about the moderates supposedly.
Can I just, before we go on, say about the mistress point.
Mm-hmm.
Bow, 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 bow.
That would be a major. Bow, bow, bow.
Okay.
Okay. With the CBO report released, there will be perhaps even more pressure on those Republicans who have already said that they're unlikely to support the bill. I mean, this certainly isn't going to make the case easier for those who are facing tough re-election battles coming up. And we've broken down over the past week some of those who've said they're against it and why they're against it. Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, and then Nevada Republican Senator Dean Heller on Friday, I believe, why he was against it. Today we have another one coming from a slightly different angle, and that is Senator Ron Johnson, who posted an editorial in the New York Times breaking down some of his reasons he's against this bill. He said, "We should return more flexibility to states to give individuals the freedom and choice to buy plans they want without Obamacare's reforms that make the health insurance worth a damn. And we should look to improve successful models for protecting individuals with pre-existing conditions, models underway prior to Obamacare, such as those in Maine and Wisconsin. Only then can the market begin to rein in the underlying cost of healthcare itself and reduce the cost of taxpayer subsidies." So we've been talking about the moderate objections to this bill. That's not what we have here though. He says there's too much being spent on subsidies, even though this bill is cutting those subsidies and eventually killing the out-of-pocket subsidies. He wants more subsidy reduction, and he specifically doesn't like that it still technically protects those with pre-existing conditions.
So
like that's the part everybody can get behind, that you should still maintain those. But Ron Johnson says those have got to go or he can't vote for it.
Okay, so here we go again with the myth of the moderate Republican. Ron Johnson, when he was running against Russ Feingold in what appeared to be a tight race for a while in Wisconsin, there was a lot of press about Ron Johnson's not one of those conservative Republicans, he's a moderate Republican. And Feingold was very progressive, had won that seat before, of course. And so, we've got a guy who's really on the left and a moderate Republican. And so when I read that Ron Johnson was concerned about this bill, even me, for a second, I was like, oh, look, there it is. I guess, you know, I'm waiting on Susan Collins, and it looks like Ron Johnson will come as a moderate Republican and object to. And then, no, he thinks it's too moderate. He thinks it needs to be more conservative, more draconian, and you need to make sure that people with pre-existing condition do not get health care, okay? So now that seems like a hyperbole. I mean, they don't get insurance. No. In a radio interview, which I think we have for you, mm-hmm. he made it clear that, like, I mean, look, this is like, I mean, the guys are already a wreck. These people are a wreck.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And so what are we going to get? Just give them the insurance at the same price we give healthy people? That's the point of insurance. There are no moderate Republicans. No, he went over the top conservative here. So the next time they lie to you and they do those political ads and etc., the minute they get into office, they are going to be extreme right wingers, just like Ron Johnson. Yeah. He serves the wealthy donors. It's his own class. That's what his whole point was. And so I need more tax cuts for the rich. I need more tax cuts. And I want to decipher them because that's partly our job here. Republicans mean when they use code words. Code word freedom has nothing to do with freedom. Freedom means tax cuts for the rich. Mm-hmm. So the Obamacare didn't have enough freedom. In other words, I'd like $800 billion in tax cuts for the rich. Okay, and when they say protecting, they mean destroying. So in this case, he used the word protecting in the context of, we'd like to protect people with pre-existing conditions.
Yeah, now you're protected right now.
Yeah. Now, if you think, you say, oh, well, maybe he does mean protecting. Maybe you guys are being unfair. We have clearer quotes in a second, mm-hmm. exactly what his intention is. Okay. And whenever they say they're going to protect Social Security or Medicare, that means they're going to cut it. In order to protect it, we have to trim it, cut it, rein it in so that it could exist at a much reduced level later. And remember what they said about Medicaid. They were going to protect Medicaid. And what did they just do? They cut it by $772 billion. That is a proposal that Ron Johnson thinks doesn't go far enough.
Yeah. Well, why don't we turn to the radio interview you alluded to. We're going to get to his really cruel comparison of people with pre-existing conditions to something else. You're going to love the metaphor he uses there. But first, though, let's talk about his objections to the process leading up to where we're at right now.
We need a vote this week, and the Senate needs to pass a compromise this week. Obamacare is falling apart across the country.
Well, okay, we'll disagree on that, Hugh. First of all, I come from a manufacturing background, and I do know how to solve problems. And what has transpired in the Senate so far, and I'd say in the House, are the design of bills void of information. But I'm not going to be able to press that case. We're not going to be able to make the changes to the bill if we're forced into a vote this week. We just don't have time.
That's why you got reelected, to pass this bill this week. It's a disaster not to do so.
Hugh, you don't have to do it this week. I just completely disagree with you on that. You know, what I found, and again, I've been traveling around the state tirelessly, no offense, way more than you have.
Of course,
yeah. My stance in terms of let's take the time, try and get it right, but also give people a chance to find out exactly what is in the Senate bill. Let's get some numbers.
But you have to begin the journey with one step. And I have to push back hard, Senator. I believe the Republican Party will suffer a massive defeat at the polls in 2018 if it fails to deliver on its core promise.
Quite honestly, because leadership wants to jam this, enforce it, using that as a forcing mechanism. I don't know, Hugh, I just find that a little offensive. I'm behind the closed. I see what leadership's trying to do. They're trying to jam this thing through. It is far from a perfect bill. But I'm not
going to let perfect. Of course it is. I don't like parts of it.
All I'm asking is let's give ourselves a few more days, maybe a week or two. Don't jam this thing.
We can't fix everything in a bill. The Senate has only got 52 Republicans. You got to get the most you can get. But you have 4 days. This is not the Manhattan Project. You don't have to invent anything.
He really doesn't think that this is a major bill that's going to affect a lot of people's lives. And also, you can't wait a day or two. It needs to be done now. Think about the toll that you'll take electorally if you don't repeal this thing, this Obamacare that has majority approval in the population. I mean, look at the poll. He doesn't even have to reference polls. He can simply say that your entire party will go down unless you pass this thing.
Yep.
Because, of course, the donors don't like it. Yeah, sure. But there's data, and again, I tweeted about this over the weekend. It's people suppose analysts will just say these things about policy and about electoral strategy and all that without referencing any data. Either they don't know that there are actual people accumulating information that you can base these assertions on, or they know that it's out there and they're either not equipped to analyze it, or they know that it wouldn't support their case. But there's too much just asserting things without any reference to reality. Like you can say, here is a poll that backs up what I say, and someone can look at that poll and not agree with it necessarily, but you should at least try to have some data for what you're asserting.
I have a lot to say about Hugh Hewitt, but I want to save it till after we get the even juicier second clip.
Yeah. So
tell us.
By the way, new MSNBC host Hugh Hewitt.
Yeah, no, that's where I'm going with it. But give us the second clip.
Exactly. Okay. So the second clip is if you don't think that it's bad enough that they want to take away this health insurance, Ron Johnson's rationale for why those with pre-existing conditions deserve losing their coverage. You're gonna love that.
We've done something with our healthcare system that you would never even think about doing, for example, with auto insurance, where you'd require auto insurance companies to sell a policy to somebody after they crash their car. States that have enacted guaranteed issue, which is the guarantee for pre-existing conditions, it crashes their markets. It causes these markets to collapse. It causes premiums to skyrocket. Now, the good news, Chuck, is you can actually address people with pre-existing conditions without collapsing markets. It's by properly designing high-risk pools. You know, Maine passed guaranteed issue, and what they had to do is they had to institute an invisible high-risk pool.
Okay, so let's break that down. Number one, he's talking about auto insurance. I mean, it would be an outrage to mandate auto insurance. Oh, right, it is mandated. Yeah. So when we said maybe we should mandate healthcare insurance, they're like, "Oh, good, the government, man, there's no freedom left in the country." Well, how can we still have our freedoms when we're mandated to buy auto insurance? Nonetheless,
you think we have our freedoms?
gone. I just wanted to have no insurance at all and recklessly crash into everyone, but they took my freedom away. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then, but let's go to the heart of his commentary, which is that. Well, I mean, look, would you give somebody car insurance if they already had a crash? In other words, if you have a pre-existing condition, you've already had a crash. Your body's crashed, you're useless. Of course, we're not going to give you health insurance. Or if we do, we're going to charge you an arm and a leg, maybe literally. And so that's a sad day for you, man. That's the market crushing your soul and your well-being. Literally in this case, yeah. And Ron Johnson doesn't mind, he celebrates it, he calls it freedom. Now, he works for those guys, he works for those corporations, so he thinks, you're taking my freedom away to charge you so much more if you're sick. I mean, what do you want me to do, cover people the same just because they have insurance? You think it's supposed to be like insurance where the healthy and everybody pay in, and then when you get sick, you get it out. No, when you get sick, you get screwed. So I can make more money. You see my analogy? So this is the moderate Republican.
Well, I would go just one step farther in that the comparison to the person who's had some car wrecks, he's not saying it, but he's saying it, is that if you have a pre-existing condition, you did something reckless. I don't know what it is, but you did something, because somebody who's just getting into car accidents obviously is doing something wrong. And so in his metaphor, a child who's born with some sort of juvenile cancer has made the wrong choices in life. They lived recklessly. I mean, think about how easy it would be to put together ads against him. Like, show the people with actual pre-existing conditions, congenital heart defects, predispositions for certain types of cancer, genetic illnesses, autoimmune disorders. Those people are fucking reckless. That's what's going on. They're just getting drunk behind the wheel and smashing into someone. Who the hell would vote for that guy if that's what he sees his constituents as?
By the way, if you did that ad, and the Republicans do vicious smear ads that aren't remotely true, like they did against Ossoff saying that he was part of the people that led to the shooting of Steve Scalise.
Yeah.
But if you did that perfectly accurate ad with him saying, I mean, hey, look, man, if you get into car accidents, that's your problem, but a baby born with no fault of their own, mm-hmm. he would exclude. You know what the mainstream press would do? They say, oh, this Democrat won't be civil. They're not civil anymore, these Democrats. How dare you point out that if people don't have insurance,
yeah, let them.
And they have a major ailment, then they get sick.
Of course. Now, if Scarborough wants to play the ad a whole bunch of times, he's free to.
Yeah, and look, you know me, John, I'm with you, full speed ahead. I'm just telling you that there is no such thing as liberal media. No, no, no. Those guys will pounce on any Democrat that actually aggressively tells you the truth.
That's true.
And right now, you know, we're in the middle of he said, she said. Okay, and then finally, Hugh Hewitt was a person that interviewed Ron Johnson about this and begged him. You know, he said, literally, quote from Hugh Hewitt in another part of the radio interview, "I just beg you, Ron Johnson, you know I supported you for 2 election cycles. Do not kill this bill this week. I just beg you." Hugh Hewitt now has a show on MSNBC. So tell me again about the liberal media. The only example they have about anyone with a perspective is MSNBC, right? Mm-hmm. Among the mainstream press. And they just hired the guy who's begging a Republican senator after having supported him with every ounce of his being, begging him to vote for the Republican bill so that 22 million people will be kicked off health insurance, etc. Tell me again who the liberal media is. There's no such thing, man. Everybody in the establishment media with their parent corporations that are multi-billion dollar giant organizations are not on your side. They're not on progressive side. So they're going to normalize everything, and this should not be normalized. This bill is deeply draconian, and so far the only opposition from the right that has mounted against it wants it to be even more draconian. That's a fact.
The only silver lining with him getting that show, the weekend show, is that I have listened to Hugh Hewitt. How long could that show possibly last? Who the hell is going to watch that?
No, but look.
Oh, the millennials aren't watching TV news anymore. What can we do? Hugh Hewitt.
Okay, so, but it goes to the other point. Why is Hugh Hewitt getting shown on MSNBC, right? Because he has no audience. Tell me. I have, you know what people in media do when they have a large audience, and by the way, present company not excluded, they brag about it, okay? They say, I have this, I have that, here's my ratings, here's my numbers, right? I have never heard of Hugh Hewitt's size of his audience, because he's on radio. And he's a small show on radio. Did you hear him? Okay, even conservatives don't like him. He has approximately 17 listeners, including his family. What? If you actually cared about getting ratings and you actually cared about running a progressive network, Hugh Hewitt would be literally, in a country of 330 million people, among the very last people you would put on air. But on the other hand, if you didn't care about ratings, but you desperately wanted to put more conservatives on air, Hugh Hewitt is exactly the guy you would hire.
Yeah. Just one other point to make. So we're talking about those Republican senators who have said, at least so far, that they're not supporting the bill. Some of them have been very specific about why they're not supporting it in their quotes. And in several cases, what they said was sort of contingent on the CBO report. Well, now the CBO report is out, and so we can say definitively whether it makes sense for them to now switch to supporting the bill. So I'm going to read 2 quotes for you. The first is from Susan Collins, Republican senator, who said, "I can't support a bill that's going to greatly increase premiums for our older Americans or out-of-pocket costs. We showed you it does that for those who aren't quite old enough for Medicare yet. I cannot support a bill that is going to result in tens of millions of people losing their health insurance, which the CBO shows will happen. And I can't support a bill that's going to make such deep cuts in Medicaid, almost $800 billion. So according to Susan Collins, that's 3 strikes. She is now out. She will not be supporting this bill if she has any integrity and stands by her word. But in addition, Dean Heller, this was released at the end of last week, said, "I cannot support a piece of legislation that takes away insurance from tens of millions of Americans and hundreds of thousands of Nevadans." Well, it takes away insurance from tens of millions of Americans, so it looks like Dean Heller will not be supporting this bill either.
So don't get John wrong. Collins and Heller have not said that they are not supporting this bill. Okay, so we're going to find out.
They just said it though. They can't support it if it does that. Well, it does that. I don't know if they know that, but now they know because they watch our clip.
Okay, so there you go. There's two. There's two. All you need is one more, right?
Ted Cruz will do the right thing.
They'll vote for it. They'll all vote. No, 50 of them will vote. 50 or 51 of them will vote for it. They will
save one.
They will. If they think Susan Collins needs to vote against it in order to win her next election in Maine. Or Heller in Nevada,
maybe they
will release one of them or two of them and pass it with the absolute bare minimum. And remember when Obama was like, "Well, we do have 60 Democratic senators. You remember when they had the supermajority? We can even get it past the filibuster. We can do anything we want. But we should ask the Republicans what they want just to get them on board anyway. Mm-hmm. They said, and they said for a long time, we shouldn't do it with reconciliation because that would hurt the Republicans' feelings. Mm-hmm. And you see how much the Republicans seem to care about Democrats.
They did ram it through, though. A good year-long ramming.
They inched it through.
Classic ramming style.
Okay, anyway. Well, I promise we're going to stop talking about ramming when we come back.
Speak for yourself.
The Muslim ban, it's back. What are the contours of it? And who among the Supreme Court voted for it? And I'm particularly curious about Gorsuch. We'll tell you all about it when we return. Back on the Young Turks, let me read some tweets for you guys. These are, you can communicate with us when the show's live, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on hashtag TYT Live on Twitter. I am Sock says, wait a minute, old people get sick? I am Sock, are you a Republican?
It's anecdotal, but I've heard of it happening.
Yeah, and I know you're kidding. Rafer Madness says, yes, you can get away with taking away healthcare if the so-called opposition party doesn't offer a popular alternative. No, to be fair, they have. In the Senate, the Democrats have proposed Medicare for all by one senator. Still looking for a second.
Well, and I get the general, the goal behind the tweet is to say we should offer an alternative, but I think that cutting the healthcare $22 million is going to hurt you regardless of whether there's an alternative, because there is an alternative. It's the law that we have right now.
Yeah. Hissy Fit writes in, if you don't understand how insurance works, you should absolutely not be working on the current healthcare bill. Hissy Fit, I got bad news for you, too late. Control Left says, hey Hugh, is you being born a colossal asshole considered a pre-existing condition? Good question, I don't know. We'll have to find
out. Reckless, became an asshole, shouldn't have crashed.
And Gabby Marita says, Hugh Hewitt has tens of fans, tens.
There are dozens of us, dozens.
Okay, that is fair, okay.
Yes. Okay.
Hold on, let me do this, okay. So guys, amazing news for you guys, in fact, let me do. All right, free membership. It's trial membership. You guys get, there's a month to get a month. So we've gone nuts. Normally these are trial membership for like a week, but you're actually gonna get it for a month. Normally we do it for a very limited time, but we are gonna do it for a whole month here. So what do you get for a membership? Oh, what are you gonna do? You gotta go to tytnetwork.com/join. So if ever you wanna go, this is the time. And you click on the $10 a month membership, don't panic. Enter the promo code FREETYT and you'll get it free for a month, okay? So the promo code is FREETYT. The website obviously is tytnetwork.com/join. Okay, now so what do you get? You get the whole 2-hour show, so obviously ad free. You get it on demand if you want, you get it as a podcast if you want, you can do it a live stream if you want. Of course you're supporting independent media, which makes this whole show happen in the first place. Now in this case, you're not because it's free, but still the thought is there and we appreciate it.
Moral support.
That's right. And if you don't know, if you only see the clips on YouTube or Facebook or other places, Young Turks has 2 hours where you get the hour one, you get hour two, and then we have post game just for the members. You'll be able to get that with your free trial membership. And then you've got Aggressive Progressives and Old School, which are nearly exclusively for the members. Then you've got member shows. Oh my God, we even put John Iadarola's Think Tank in there.
Oh,
Nerd
damn.
Alert, What the Flick, movie reviews, special events, TYT interviews, Murder with Friends, TYT classics. The whole network is there. And then some of the things that you would normally, that only members get, like live interviews with some of our guests. And we might have a very important senator coming on soon, which would be very dramatic. All that, this is your time. It's a free trial for a whole month. Go to tytnetwork.com/join and enter the promo code FREETYT. Have at it, Hoss. And soon you'll be thinking. So celebrate with all your friends and family. All right, John, what's next?
Who's the senator?
Yeah, we'll find out.
I'm gonna ask during the break. Anyway, more big news for you. Today, the Supreme Court handed Donald Trump at least a partial victory on his Muslim travel ban by reinstating significant portions of it. We're going to break down what is reinstated and what is not in this video. The Supreme Court ruled that the Trump administration should be allowed to enforce the ban starting on Thursday, June 29th. That's 72 hours after the court's ruling was issued. The Supreme Court will take up the question of constitutionality this fall, which means that the court case, the lingering court case has been going on for months already, will continue to go forward. So what is happening today is not necessarily permanent, although it is bad for the people that it will affect in the meantime and theoretically sets a bad precedent for the future. But let's break down the specifics here. The Trump administration will begin to bar some citizens of Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen from entering the US for 90 days later this week. And it will be able to stop some refugees from entering for 120 days. Now, as we pointed out in the show earlier, the bringing back certain portions of it was widely supported by the justices, but some wanted more. Conservative justices Neil Gorsuch, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel Alito argue that the Trump administration should be allowed to enforce the ban in all cases beyond what they will be able to do for the next few months. So I know you were wondering where Gorsuch came out on this. He wanted a full reinstatement of the ban going forward until at least this fall and possibly permanent.
Yeah, every once in a while, the establishment media will see conservative who is not foaming at the mouth, who can actually put together a sentence or two back to back.
Yeah.
And they'll go, oh my God, this guy's reasonable. He's not like Trump. He's not like the other guys. Neil Gorsuch, what a reasonable guy. He went to Harvard Law with Barack Obama. He's among the elite. He should be great. No, you look at his cases. He was among the very, very most conservative judges in the country. In fact, with his ruling in the case where he said, you know, if you don't want to listen to a corporation that tells you to sit in your truck and freeze to death, then you should be fired. So no other judge in the country had ruled in that direction.
Position.
Right. So don't get surprised when Gorsuch, as he does in this case, votes extreme right wing in every single case. So.
But. It doesn't matter because if anyone else had won the presidency, they probably would have appointed him too. Anyway, let's break down more of the specifics on what is being reinstated. Tourists from the six majority Muslim countries who don't have close family in the US will definitely be barred from entering, which is great for the American tourism industry. So way to go there, Donald Trump. Anyone who already has a valid visa should still be allowed to enter the country. Although, I mean, there you're really leaving it up to a lot of individuals that theoretically could adjudicate it in a more or less stringent fashion. So theoretically, some, if they have no connections to questionable people and connections to family in the US, will theoretically still be allowed to enter the country, although that remains to be seen. But I did want to show this to Cenk because obviously Donald Trump very excited about this, considers it a gigantic win for him. And so he tweeted this, very grateful for the 9-0 decision from the US Supreme Court. We must keep America safe. And it's 9-0 with an O. Leaving me to have to think for at least 3 minutes, does he know what the O in 9-0 means? And I don't know that he does. What the hell?
This is our president. We have a
child. I know.
So another point I wanted to make about this is, it does politics matter for judges and justices? Of course. So every other court that had looked at the travel ban said, look, it's obvious he's trying to ban Muslims. He said it over and over again. He said that he was for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the country when he was running for president. Rudy Giuliani said that he then called him up and asked him for a way to make it legal, but it was in fact a Muslim ban.
Yeah.
And then he confirmed it and reconfirmed it over and over again.
Recently.
So the Fourth Circuit looked at that and said that's a violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. We cannot establish a religion and you are clearly discriminating against Islam here. Or people who are Muslims, so that's unconstitutional. The Supreme Court looked at it and was like, no, I don't think so. Yeah, you know, he wants to, these are six random countries. Could have been Norway. Now, look, conservatives will say, to be fair to them, he didn't ban all the Muslim countries. You know, the ones he's got really good business deals with, they still can come in, like Saudi Arabia. Yeah. by the way, some of the worst abusers.
Cutter.
15 out of 19 of the hijackers on 9/11 were Saudis. But they can come back in, no problem. We got a lot of deals with the Saudis, right? So, but the conservatives turn around and go, hey man, you say tomato, I say tomato. We didn't ban all the Muslim countries, so it must not be about Muslims.
I won't make the actual, it would be very easy to make historical analogies about, well, they didn't ban everybody, they didn't lock up everybody, they didn't, you insert whatever you want from history. We're worried about precedents as well. Not to mention, of course, that this is bad by itself, even if they never go farther. But theoretically, they could. If the Supreme Court were to uphold this, then 6 can become 7 or 10 or 20 or the entirety of the planet.
Yeah. They said that preserving national security is an urgent objective of the highest order. Because like national security in the time that that ban had been blocked had fallen apart. You see how many people came in from Yemen and Somalia and blew people up? Oh right, none. In fact, it's not just the time that the travel ban had been rejected by the lower courts. Yeah. It's since 9/11. The 6 countries involved have not had one person from those countries do a deadly attack inside the United States. It is based on no facts whatsoever.
Cenk, you're using big words. If Donald Trump is watching this, you want to know how many refugees from these 6 countries have committed terror attacks in the US? 0, spelled O. None of them.
So, and to give you a sense of how much this ruling matters, obviously it's the Supreme Court, so that's a huge deal. Yeah. Now they're going to do the full ruling later. This is just temporary. This is saying you can go forward with the ban while we consider the case.
Yeah.
But the 90-day ban will already have been completely executed by the time they get to making a decision on the case.
So they get it.
And maybe even the whole 120-day ban on refugees. But if you're against Muslims entering the country, I mean, Muslims from those 6 particular countries you're really worried about, but not the Muslims from the other countries. Anyways, don't worry, because if the Supreme Court says it's okay, the bans can become indefinite. So then we'll have an indefinite exclusion based on religion. I'm sure that's what the founding fathers would have wanted when they said, we shall not establish a religion.
They're very specific.
Yeah. All right. Now we got to take another quick break. When we come back, one of the stories we have for you is the funders and the politicians on the Republican side get a little bit more specific. They're like, we want everything. What difference does it make? We're just going to rub it in your face. They get brazen about how much the bribery has become official.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll show you those quotes when we come back. All right, back on the Young Turks. I already have member shoutouts: Angela Best and Emily Carter. No, these are old school members. They're not the people who did the free trial, but panic, free trial for a month. This is a big opportunity. As my wife would say, golden opportunity. And time to take advantage of it at TYT.
What do you have to lose?
Well, literally nothing.
Nothing.
TYTnetwork.com/join. Become a member this month and get it for free. Okay, Ryan Zephyr says, the getting the band back together graphic was a stroke of genius. Okay.
I think we've used it before.
Admittedly. That is a rare thing that I remember that was mine. We'll see. I knew that John was not going to agree. I know it.
Well, here's the thing. I did suggest it this morning, but when I said it, I was like, I'm pretty sure we used that before.
Yes.
It was either Cenk or like Jer. Anyway.
Okay. Anyways, Wendy Hoover says, hey, Trump was aiming for the 0, but his tiny hands impeded his attempt, and he had to settle for the capitalized O. I like any reference to his tiny hands, but that is actually irrational. His tiny hands would help him in that instance, Wendy. Let's be fair.
That's true. That's true.
All right, let's go forward.
Okay. Today, churches across America celebrated a new Supreme Court ruling that opens the way for some taxpayer money to go to church projects. And today we're going to talk about one in particular. This is the Trinity Lutheran Church. But we want to start from the beginning and show the battle that they waged to get this taxpayer money. Back in 2012, the church applied for a grant from the state of Missouri to rubberize its playground surface using old and discarded tires. It applied despite written regulations that barred state grants to religious institutions. So basically, it has a school, and the school has a playground, and they wanted to rubberize a portion of it for safety reasons. So the state turned it down, since the regulations were very specific, citing the state constitution's ban on any state aid, direct or indirect, to religious schools. So they then appealed that ruling. They launched a court case. Lawyers for the church school argued that the grant program was open to all not-for-profit schools except religious ones. Thus, they said religious schools were being treated worse than everyone else. Because as we know, it is really rough on Christians in America. But that's the case they made. And it turns out that the Supreme Court bought it in a specific way. And we're going to break down what they did and didn't accept out of that. But Trinity Lutheran will get the money. They will finally be able to rubberize that portion of the playground. John Roberts said this. The consequence is, in all likelihood, a few extra scraped knees, but the exclusion of Trinity Lutheran from a public benefit for which it is otherwise qualified solely because it's a church is odious to our Constitution all the same and cannot stand. And I believe that it is literally impossible for a person to not be deceptive when they use the phrase odious to the Constitution. But he is a fan of this. He thinks that they should get that money. It was not unanimous, though. Sonia Sotomayor actually read aloud her dissenting opinion, in part saying, if this separation means anything, it means that the government, separation of church and state, obviously, it means that the government cannot, or at the very least need not, tax its citizens and turn that money over to houses of worship. The court today blinds itself to the outcome this history requires and leads us instead to a place where separation of church and state is a constitutional slogan, not a constitutional commitment. That is a great turn of phrase there. And yeah, this money will now effectively, the church, rather than having to raise the money and spend it itself, will now not need to. That is effectively, even if the school itself, the playground, isn't a part of prayer and worship, that is a financial benefit going to that church.
So before I get to my actual comments, let's have fun and acknowledge that the word rubberize is funny. Okay, now it's an uncomfortable context, so we're moving forward.
That is odious to the show.
That is indeed. So now, if you're a conservative, it's like, oh, what about your children? You guys don't want the children to have playgrounds? No, it's not about that. God bless, or appropriately, they're playgrounds. I want them to have playgrounds. We all do, right? And so it's very simple to say, like, look, if the other schools and parks are getting playgrounds, why can't the church? It seems like you're discriminating against the church. But we don't spend taxpayer money on churches or temples or mosques. Okay, so, and then of course the natural extension of that is, well, then now that I got a playground, everybody's got playgrounds, I got a playground. Everybody's got doors, why can't you pay for the church's door?
Everybody's got a cafeteria.
Yeah, why can't you pay for the cafeteria? Well,
everybody's a dorm.
Everybody has a building, don't they? Why don't you just pay for the mosque that I'm building? I mean the church.
Everybody has a confession.
Well,
yeah, maybe not.
Okay, we can leave out the confession for that. So obviously you can see the problem here, which is that first it should apply to all the religions, and that's where some conservatives might go, well, now, well, hold on, now, you're my tap hand money for a mosque. I don't know about that.
Muslim community centers are probably pretty excited about this.
Yes. So, no, that's why we shouldn't establish a religion, because it gets messy. It not only hurts the government, it also hurts the different religions. Because, and even if we're going to establish a Christian one, which one? Methodist, Lutheran, Presbyterian, I don't know, right? No, and so this is a mess, and you don't get involved in it. And then there's no end to that chain of logic. Everybody else gets teachers. You'd be discriminating against the church if we didn't also get teachers. They all get books. Why can't we use it for a Bible or the Holy Quran, right?
Yeah.
So just remember the principles, if you have any, and you should apply it equally. And in this case, there's a reason why the founding fathers set this republic up in a way that said that we shall not mix state and church, shall not establish a religion. So yes, it might seem silly to to deny those poor kids a nice rubberized playground, but in reality, it's a very, very important principle.
It sets a precedent. That is why we're concerned, and that is why the people who are happy today are happy. They're not happy because of some rubberization going on.
Yeah, they're not like, yes, one playground, we win.
But so theoretically, inside of this decision, there is a footnote that attempts to say that this is specific and shouldn't be taken more broadly. It says, this case involves express discrimination based on religious identity with respect to playground resurfacing. Don't shy away from rubberizing. Just say it, okay? Don't be ashamed.
Just say it and it'll go away. Rubberizing.
We do not address religious uses of funding or other forms of discrimination. So theoretically, this does not need to set a precedent. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, so that's very, very interesting. So some of the so-called liberal justices also voted for this. And one theory is they did so they can get that footnote put in, which then says it only applies to playgrounds, and specifically rubber ones, and it doesn't apply to anything else. This is not an actual precedent. If that's true, why are all the religious conservatives in the country celebrating today? So, because they think, we just tricked the liberals. That footnote doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And we'll just treat it as precedent. And all we got to do is get five conservative justices to quote the case later and call it precedent, and we're done with it.
I thought they were strict literalists, though.
Yeah.
Is there any chance we could trick conservatives into being against this, saying that the rubberizing of our playgrounds is part of the continued wussification of American children? I grew up, I didn't need no rubber.
Okay,
and
so
we didn't wear them either.
Yeah.
Anyway,
look. Got uncomfortable in here. So it's a bad day for people who are secular, not just for people who are agnostic such as myself, but if you care about your own religion and protecting it and not getting it sullied by a big bad old government, you wouldn't be in favor of this. And obviously if you care about a rational rule of law, you'd also be very concerned about this. And you wouldn't necessarily trust a conservative when he says it only applies to this.
Yeah.
And have all the other conservatives celebrate.
Super last point, because you bring up the sullying by government. That is an interesting point. I've read some breakdowns referring back to previous poli-sci research showing that government funding going to churches in contexts like in a lot of European countries has actually led to the sort of the weakening of those institutions and becoming more secular. So theoretically, this long term could lead to a more secular America, but I am not going to take that chance. I would not willingly do that. Interesting. Research, but don't know that it necessarily applies here. Oh. Okay, one more story for you. This past weekend was the annual Koch Brothers Summit in Colorado Springs, where some of the richest people in the history of our planet come together to complain to each other about how hard they have it. But there's an interesting angle to this particular year's meeting in what these huge donors and the candidates that were there, what are they concerned about? What is their strategy going forward for the next year? And so we're gonna break that down. By the way, the price for admission to this retreat was a promise to give at least $100,000 to the Koch's broad policy and political network. And by the way, there were at least 18 elected officials on hand. So far, I don't know that their names have been made public, certainly not all of them. But let's talk about some of the concerns here. The president for Americans for Prosperity said, there is urgency. We believe we have a window of about 12 months to get as much of it, their policy objectives, accomplished as possible before the 2018 elections grind policy to a halt. Because, and that's totally true, we are almost always having elections here. You have a few days where we're not. And so they want to get their major priority, their policy objectives done at that point. And they have specifically cited repealing the Obamacare, which is just code for give us our gigantic tax breaks, and major tax reform, which is barely code for give us our gigantic tax breaks. So basically, they have one goal, it is gigantic tax breaks. It just comes in a couple of different flavors. And we've got some quotes from donors that we'll get to.
And those quotes are amazing. So let me just give it a little extra context here. So first of all, I debated at Oxford with the person who won the Citizens United case. And he made the claim like, oh, this is the progressives who don't want you to have money in politics. By the way, it's not just progressives. A lot of conservatives hate the crony capitalism that comes out of that system. They says, oh, they're trying to deny you a voice, the average American. You had to pay at least $100,000 to get in the door of this meeting.
No, you just have to pledge to give it.
Oh, okay.
I pledge that every day, I don't care.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they take notes on who delivered on that pledge.
That's probably true.
So $100,000 to even begin to affect these policymakers. And you would think that they would at least have the decency to not admit that they're there. But 18 of them go there and they raise their hand and they say, oh yeah, sure, I came here for the bribes. And these are the top bribe givers in the country. Yeah. So these are legalized bribes now. So we made the system inherently corrupt. If you're worried about the swamp, this is what created the swamp. If you're worried about the corruption of big government, who do you think corrupted them? These guys, not illegal immigrants who don't have a dime to their name.
Yeah.
It's guys like this. And then Americans for Prosperity is a Koch brothers group. So Tim Phillips is the spokesperson for it, but it is funded by the Koch brothers, who have about $80 billion between them. So any tax break fundamentally affects them. So this group overall, it affects billions of dollars per year. So the Koch brothers in total through this group plan to spend about $300 to $400 million to begin with in this election. That's just warming up.
A midterm election.
On a midterm election, okay? And you think, oh my God, they're bribing people or just speaking to people to the tune of $300 to $400 million. But there are multi-billion dollar ramifications here. And why healthcare reform and tax reform? Because healthcare reform, as John pointed out, has $600 to $800 billion of tax cuts for the rich. And tax reform is nothing but tax cuts for the rich. So they'll throw in a sprinkle in a couple of tax cuts for the middle class and go, look at us, are we not merciful, right? But that's the whole intent of this thing. Now they're getting even more brace.
Yeah, and by the way, the $300 to $400 million, that's a significant, you could, just them two, could fund a significant portion of all of the Republican House races in this coming cycle, just by themselves if they want to. Also, if you have $300 to $400 million to spend on elections, you don't need to be fighting for more tax breaks. You could spend your $300 to $400 million. Think about what else you could spend that on.
Yeah, just dude, go on a yacht, man. Buy
a yacht. You're thinking way too small. Build a private spaceship and tour Venus.
Stop, like.
Okay, maybe not for $300 million.
Okay, but stop bribing our politicians and go enjoy life. You have $80 billion. No, must have more tax cuts. One last piece of context before we get to the devastating quotes. It's not just that the midterm elections are coming. I think that the Koch brothers are also thinking, we don't know how long this Trump guy is gonna last. Mm. And while he's still popular with the Republicans, it looks like on the tax front, he'll give us anything we want. Yeah. Take it now. All right, now
so here's some of those quotes. Texas-based donor Doug Deason has already informed a handful of congressional Republicans that the quote, Dallas piggy bank is closed until he sees more action. That quote by itself should lead to comprehensive campaign finance reform, I think. How are they allowed to talk like that? But they did. He said, I said, no, I'm not going to the donating to some candidates because we're closing the checkbook until you get some things done. Noting that he has personally rallied nearly 24 major Texas donors. We're talking about gigantic sums of money there. He said, get Obamacare repealed and replaced, get tax reform passed, get it done, and we'll open it back up. That is your proof of corruption right there. He just made your whole case.
They used to talk about the pigs at the trough. You know, the politicians who are so corrupt and they're feeding at the trough of corruption. Here, one of the guys who corrupted them goes, yeah, I've got a piggy bank.
Yeah, he's the one saying it now.
That's right. And here, little boy, here's your trough. No, wait, I'm taking it away until you give me every tax cut that I want. When they get those millions of dollars, those politicians, I mean, it's true of Democrats and Republicans. In this case, it is totally the Republicans. They're all voting for this and they're going over the top on the tax cuts. But certainly it has been Democrats in the past and it'll be some Democrats on the tax reform bill, right? And then the mainstream media and the Democrats and the Republicans will say, are you saying that these honorable gentlemen and ladies have been corrupted? Yes, that's what we're saying.
He's saying it.
Yes, the guy who corrupted him is bragging about it. And by the way, yes, one of the guys that we know was there, and this is wonderful irony, is Dave Brat. The reason it's irony is because Dave Brat is a Republican in Virginia who ran a populist campaign against the bankers in Virginia to unseat Eric Cantor, a historic upset of the sitting House Majority Leader. Okay, because he was a populist, he was for the little guy. And all of a sudden, here he is with the billionaires. And he says, quote, we don't get taxes through, we're all going home, pack the bags. Now, wait a minute, you're telling me that you're the guys who voted for you because they hated the big banks in rural Virginia? Now, all of a sudden, if you don't pass billions of dollars in tax cuts for the rich, are gonna send you home? No, that's not what he's referring to. He's referring to the donors.
Yeah.
If we don't give them what they paid for, they're gonna send us all home and replace us with even more compliant, corrupt politicians.
Well, then Dave Brat, support campaign finance reform to take that weapon away from them.
But why would he? He's already entered the trough. Mm-hmm. And he, since he's at the trough with the people who've paid at least $100,000 to get there, those donors, the top donors in the world. Now Dave Brat thinks, you idiots, you suckers. I tricked you.
Yeah.
I told you that I was for you, and I immediately went to the richest people in the country, and I took their legalized bribes, and from now on, all I'll do is work for them. So now you know how this game is played. By the way, if you actually want reform, wolf-pack.com. You gotta get money out of politics and you gotta do it in an amendment. If you don't, this will never end and they will rob you to the end of time. Go do whatever you can, be an American, get our democracy back. Get money out of politics no matter what you do. Volunteer, spend your time, donate, do whatever you need to do. Get involved, be an American. Wolf-pack.com. Otherwise, these are our new lords that rule over us. Okay, we're out of time. Everybody check out youtube.com/thinktank. I don't know if you know this, John has a whole other show and channel over there. A lot of you do know it, but it's great, it's fun. You should check it out. Anna will be back in the next segment with, like I said, a professor and a doctor have been fired. And you'll agree with some of those decisions and maybe not others, but they are all controversial.
Or maybe all of them.
Okay, we'll be right back.